I am Tom Johnson, registration number 013099. I represent Zurich. May it please the court, counsel, Mr. Graham. When confronted with an inconsistent verdict in this case, the trial judge handled it properly, correctly. He handled it in a manner consistent with Colorado law and a manner indeed required by Colorado law. Judge Mullen's only mistake was to later enter a judgment NOV under the mistaken impression that he had handled the inconsistent verdict wrongly. And in fact, he was right. For three reasons, the trial court's entry of a judgment NOV and a supplementary amendment of the jury's verdict to add statutory penalties should be reversed.
I hate to interrupt you so early in your argument, but explain to me exactly why the original verdict, the original one, was inconsistent.
Because, Your Honor, it had found in favor of the plaintiff on liability, but had indicated, contrary to the jury's instructions and the law, that it awarded no statutory damages. It did not simply leave that blank in the verdict form blank. It actually rolled in a dollar sign and a zero. That was inconsistent with the instructions and with Colorado law, and so required a supplemental instruction from the court and a reconsideration of that verdict. That could not have been more inconsistent.
Well, after the jury made a decision in the original verdict that there were wages, unpaid wages and compensation in a specific amount, and that there was no willful conduct by Zurich in not paying those wages, what other factual determinations were there left for it to make?
Well, the further factual... decisions that had to be made, according to the instructions and the verdict form, were the amount of the statutory penalties and an entry of that amount. That was the instruction they had been given. They made a mistake. They did not fill in that amount. Now, I say it's a mistake. It may have been, and frankly, I believe it was a willful decision on their part, but it was a decision inconsistent with their instructions and inconsistent with their verdict. So they required a supplemental instruction to complete that verdict form.
Would you agree that it would have been proper just to ask the jury to determine the amount of unpaid wages and then to enter to calculate the statutory penalties separately as a matter of law?
I don't believe that would have been proper.
Okay, can you explain that to me?
Yes, until the jury is discharged, it may revise, change, totally change the verdict in any way. It should be advised, once it's given proper instructions, as to what it should do with regard to the verdict it entered. It should then be allowed to reconsider that verdict and in its entirety. That is Colorado, the law of Colorado, and the law of many other jurisdictions. So I really don't believe it would have been appropriate for the court to say, simply write in the amount, have them do that, affirm that, and that would be all. At that point, they have the right to reconsider their verdict.
Now, I may apologize for this. I may have framed my question badly. Let's take the hypothetical case in which none of these issues have yet arisen, and someone asked the court, well, here's what I'd like you to do. Just have the jury instruct, determine the amount of unpaid wages, if any, and then determine whether there was willful conduct, and then separately the court can determine the statutory penalty. I understand your answer. That would be improper because Why?
Because I believe at that point, the jury is entitled to reconsider its entire verdict. This may have been, and frankly, I believe, a circumstance where the jury determined, was split, could not determine what they wanted to do. They were split maybe evenly, and the compromise of the jury, inconsistent with the law and inconsistent with the verdict forms and instructions, was to, in effect, split the baby. Fine for the plaintiff on liability, but not improperly. I admit improperly, not award statutory penalties.
So implicit in your answer is that in determining the amount of unpaid wages, the jury needs to consider that there are going to be these statutory penalties and could take that into consideration in forming or determining the overall amount of liability.
I agree with that statement.
And so that would be your view about why those jury determinations were required.
It is, Your Honor.
And so it would be possible then under that view if the jury would come back and say, okay, we're going to essentially recalculate the penalties, deduct the wages by a certain amount, add the penalties, and end up with the same number.
They could have done that. They could have done any number of things. Under the supplementary instruction that they were given, they were free to return a verdict in favor of the plaintiff, enter the statutory penalties as they were directed to do, and find for Zurich as to willfulness. They also could have done the first two things, come back and change their verdict with regard to willfulness and find against. The supplementary instruction which they received was entirely neutral. It did not direct them as to any one way, any one verdict, one way or another. They were free to do all of those things that they that I suggested.
Pardon me if I may, Mr. Johnson, for interrupting you, and I apologize for doing that.
No.
I'm going to take another step beyond Judge Russell's question. Isn't the issue of statutory penalty an issue of law that's not for the jury in the first place? As I read the wage claim statute, it says if certain things are found to exist, i.e. wrongful withholding, and then in another circumstance, willfulness, then the court, or then there shall be penalties. Why isn't the issue of penalties just something that the court does after the jury comes back and says, yes, we find that there was wrongful withholding, this is the amount that was wrongfully withheld, and no, we don't find willfulness. Why isn't that then the next step, what are the penalties? Isn't that just the court's job and it's mathematics?
This case could have been handled that way. In other words, the instruction to the jury could have been limited to the issue of liability for the unpaid bonuses with no inquiry at all or any request of the jury to fill in the statutory damages. However, the instruction was not formulated that way. It did ask them to calculate the statutory damages. Once they had done that and expressed their intent that the statutory damages should be zero, they had then expressed the underlying determination of the jury, which could not be changed by the court without making a substantive change. What the court should do and did do under those circumstances was re-instruct the jury, tell them in that instance as to the statutory damages, how they should be handled, ask them to reconvene, to deliberate again, and that they could reconsider, as was their right under Colorado law, their entire verdict.
Isn't another way to read what the jury should have done or the court should have done is when the court gets back that verdict to say, oops, the jury was asked to decide an issue of law, one reserved for me, that is the issue of statutory penalty. They have done everything necessary up to their point. I accept their verdict. I will make the decision about statutory penalty.
Under Colorado law, the court cannot do that. When it has been given instruction and asked to make a determination, which it has made, and has expressed its intent and made an underlying determination as to that issue, the court may not change that verdict. That's a change in substance.
Even if the jury was asked to consider an issue of law that it was not supposed to consider?
That is correct.
I mean, excuse me, I don't want to interrupt you if you have further response to Judge Bernard's question.
Go ahead and I may get back to that.
So is it your position that the jury did make a decision as to the statutory penalties as it was directed to do so by the court?
It did make that decision, and it made a decision that zero, literally a dollar sign and zero statutory penalties would be awarded, inconsistent with the instructions and the law.
Let me ask you this then. What significance, if any, do you attach to the wording of the verdict form A that was submitted to the jury, which says that they find for the plaintiff and award the following damages? They then fill in the number for unpaid wage and compensation. Paragraphs 2 and 3 say, where there's a zero, say nothing about statutory penalty. In fact, the verdict form itself does not contain the word penalty in it. So how do you explain that the jury had made a decision about the statutory penalty, which was due once they found the unpaid wages and compensation?
Frankly, I don't recall the exact language of items 2 and 3. As I recall, they did indicate the statutory damages or statutory, if it didn't use the word penalties, the clear implication what is the statutory award.
Well, let me ask you this. It seems to me that there's been a prevailing misnomer throughout these proceedings where the statutory penalties have been called statutory damages. Is there a difference between damages and penalties?
I don't believe there is, Your Honor.
They would both be subject to the same interest and all of that?
Yes.
Subject to, I'm sorry, I didn't catch the
interest question. Any interest on the damage award and all of that?
Yes.
So are you then, is it your position that that statutory damages, determining statutory penalties as provided by the statute, mandatory statutory penalties, is a factual question for the jury?
It should not have been. It should not have been, but it was submitted in that instruction. And once that instruction was submitted and again submitted to the jury, they indicated twice by their two verdicts that they did not intend to award statutory penalties or damages. There did not appear to be any dispute among the parties or the court that those two lines did refer to what should have been automatic statutory penalties. But having submitted that instruction to the jury, wherein they expressed their underlying determination under Colorado law that cannot be changed by the judge, it is a change of substance. What should be done is exactly what the trial court did. He got it right. He gave them a proper instruction. He resubmitted for their reconsideration, and they were fully entitled to do any number of things at that time, including returning the verdict for Zurich. It's a verdict that was correct. It was final. The jury was polled. It's a verdict that should be reinstated. Before I reserve a minute and a half here, I want to say that in doing that, they did not do anything that justifies the statutory remedy of a judgment NOV. I think it is virtually agreed and stipulated by the parties here that the evidence in trial was sufficient to support the verdict in favor of Zurich, and there were genuine issues of fact. Under those circumstances, a judgment NOV cannot be entered. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson, let me ask. I know you have very little time left, and you're going to reserve that time. So I'm going to call you back. I'm going to say off the clock here. I have one quick question. You answered my question that you thought that damages and statutory penalties were both factual questions. The determination of those were both factual questions for the jury. I believe that's what you said.
They were to determine them. That's what the instruction was.
Okay, my question is, and if so, do you have any authority for that, that damages and penalties are both factual questions for the jury, I would like to see it. I haven't seen it in any briefs submitted to us.
No, what I mean by that is they were factual questions to be determined by the jury by the instructions they were given. They were told to calculate. They were told how to calculate, and they were admonished to enter those statutory penalties if they found for the plaintiff. They didn't do that, and they clearly expressed a different intent, which could not be changed without there being a change of substance.
I understand that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chula.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, Mr. Johnson, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Bob Trular, and at the council table is the plaintiff. Eppley, in this case, Mr. Graham, and a co-counsel who also tried the case, Mary Jo Lowry. Both Ms. Lowry and myself tried the entire case and have that experience. I'd like to first state that the issue here is whether or not the trial court judge properly entered a judgment NOV in this case based on the standard under Rule 59E, which allows for it if there's no genuine issue of any material fact that as a matter of law, and certainly as a matter of law, there was enough evidence to support the plaintiff's verdict A being turned to a judgment. And secondly, the moving party is entitled to that judgment if the evidence, even in the light of the best interest of the party against whom the motion is made, still supports the decision. And we'll get to that. So I'd like to just pick up what I heard from Mr. Johnson and what seemed to be in the interest of the court's questions. At the time that the judgment NOV was entered, the trial judge said that what was presented was that the fact finding of the jury had been completed. There were only two things, two are combined, that were in their fact finding. The first was they had to find the elements to prove that there was a wager compensation due to the plaintiff. And the elements were in the jury instructions, vested, accrued, and determinable. And if they found those elements, because he said, if you don't find any of these, you can't find for them. If you find all three of them, then you find for the plaintiff. The next instruction said, then you shall find damages. So first they had to find the elements, and they did. That's why they wrote in the first line with the $28,000 of damages. Secondly, they found the number. Now, that's a very interesting number because it's based on the plan, and there was a lot of evidence about how the plan worked, and they came out with the exact number that was in evidence. And in fact, it was even stated by counsel for Zurich in closing that we don't dispute that that number would be the correct number if any is owed. So we know that there was sufficiency of the evidence to come to that number. Next, to receive the penalties according to the jury instructions, and the statute was more or less divided up and stated in the jury instructions, if there was a demand made within 60 days of the last day of employment, and after that demand was received, payment wasn't made within 14 days, then the penalties would attach. And
the stipulation, there was a stipulation
stipulated to in the stipulations. So at that point, the court properly would have said, the jury is not doing any fact-finding here. These facts are stipulated to, the jury accepts them. Therefore, the penalties could be added as a matter of form, not substance, because technically the zero was just incorrect in the proper calculation. Now, I mentioned there was another fact finding, and I don't want to leave that hanging. The last fact finding was whether or not the actions of Zurich were willful, and the jury answered that. So they had answered the damages question, the amount of damages, totally supported by the evidence, because it was even agreed to that that would be the amount if money were due. And then they also answered the willfulness question. It's very interesting to note also that Exhibit 32, which was prepared by the plaintiff during his testimony, went through how you get to that number of $28,623.98. And then it showed the penalty amounts. And in the closing argument, when Mr. Johnson pointed to that exhibit, he said, those amounts are not, there's no disagreement with them. So, in effect, even those penalty amounts were agreed to. Now, the jury instruction said that if you find wages are owed, you put in the amount of both incentive or wages that are owed, then it told the jury to do calculations. Did not tell them to make a finding, didn't say if you make this finding, that's when you multiply the first 7,500 by 125% and above that by 50%. It said you multiply. And that's the exact same thing that the verdict form said, is you multiply.
Pardon me, Mr. Trular, I've got a question about all that stuff. This goes back to the question I asked Mr. Johnson. Why was the jury asked to engage in that multiplication process for the purpose of penalties? Weren't the issues of fact under the statute whether wages have been withheld, if so, how much, and if so, was it willful or not? Why is the jury being asked to engage in a calculation that the statute says shall be? The penalty shall be X. Isn't that a question of law for the court as opposed to a question of fact for the jury?
It was a question of law for the court since there were stipulations. Now, I think the why is this. First of all, as plaintiff's counsel, I can tell you that we did not suggest that to be on the verdict form, but the court went out in deciding it would be on the verdict form. And notwithstanding that he didn't, the only expression I can recall would be just to keep everything in one place. But there was another aspect of the trial, and that was that there were many demand letters written by the plaintiff to Zurich prior to bringing litigation. Even letters, and these are exhibits 5 through 12, and they're in the exhibit notebook as opposed to the transcript. And those letters would say, this is how much you owe me, the exact amount the jury found. And then they would say, and if you don't pay me in time, there will be these penalties. And then it said later, you didn't pay me in time, so pay me these penalties. And I think because there was going to be reference to those numbers to perhaps make sense of the numbers, they were all being placed where the jury could see where they came, so it wouldn't appear that there were these requests that are out of thin air. And likewise, you have to make a demand under the state law, and there's a demand letter that the state has on its website that it encourages people to use. The plaintiff in this case did use it. It is one of the exhibits between 5 and 12. And that talks about the penalties being mandatory. So I think the belief was there's no harm in putting it on the form if it's on the form in the statement of multiply your wages that you find are due by this number. Not a finding. So when the jury signed verdict form A, and by the way, they were polled. A little different polling than sometimes we see, but because even though they answered individually, they kind of answered individually all at one time, and the judge kind of followed that they were all answering. So, but they were polled that that verdict was their unanimous verdict. So at that point, their finding of facts are completed. But the court sees that the evidence, even in the light most favorable to the defendant, can only be read one way on the penalties or on the multiplications, in that they've been stipulated to, so the court should have entered there on the verdict form. And the case law is very clear that that would be a calculation, because that's all it was. They even said, multiply by this number. Didn't ask a question. It gave a directive to multiply and bring the numbers down before you find willfulness.
Let me interrupt you there.
Yes.
You just said that it's very clear in the case law that it's a calculation.
Right.
What case law are you talking about?
What I meant to say is the case law is very clear that the court can change a calculation because that's form, not substance. And the case law listed in our brief is School District Number 12, Adams County versus insurance company.
Let me interrupt you a little further. I have another question. Let's assume, for the sake of argument here, we assume that the trial court got it right when it came back and granted your motion, and it would have been correct for the trial court to not allow the jury to insert the amount of mandatorily required or mandated statutory penalties. Let's assume all that's correct.
Yes, sir.
But the thing that's sitting out there is that we have a second verdict. We have another verdict that the trial court sent the jurors back to deliberate on. They came back and they rendered another verdict. What do we do with that, even if we assume the trial court was correct in granting JNOV on the original verdict?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, at the time that the verdict form came back, myself, as plaintiff's counsel, immediately said to the court that the jury should not continue to deliberate because their fact finding is done and we have stipulations that allow the calculations to be done. And that's on the record. So at that point, the trial should be deemed to be over and the verdict final so that the second verdict form doesn't exist any more than it was, to use an example from other cases, found in the courtroom, filled out but never tendered, because fact finding was done then. And the court at that point, under the case law, should not change the deliberations of the jury once their fact finding is done. So by then telling them that you can reconsider the entire verdict, the court, one, invaded the province of their fact finding, which they had already unanimously signed off on and in court openly agreed was their unanimous verdict as to all findings necessary. And two, by the court three times sending them back and saying, reconsider your entire verdict, the court could be deemed to interfere with the jury's, the sanctity of the jury verdict, and that, the case law says, shall not be done. There has to be great caution to make sure you don't do that. So that second verdict is just void as not occurring because the trial was over any more than it had occurred at a later time in a later place. That's what you do with it. And I don't want to run out of time before I do request that the attorney's fees be granted. We asked for them in our opening brief to the plaintiff appellee, and we stated the law because they are available in the underlying law of the Colorado Wage Claim Act, that therefore they would also be available to take this through appeal, and that is in our brief. And also, I would point out that under Colorado Appellate Rule 39.5, any opposition to that request for attorney's fees has to be made by the appellant in their reply to our answer brief, and that was not done. Also, there was no request by the appellant in either its opening brief or its reply brief for attorney's fees for the appellant. So we request not only that the judgment entered by the trial court by way of granting the judgment NOV be confirmed by this court, we would ask that the other judgment, the other verdict form just be considered to be void because it was after the deliberations of the jury closed and there was no issues of fact to still be determined, so that the court should not be involved in that. And then we would ask that there be attorney's fees for the appeal awarded to the appellee if successful.
Go ahead.
I have just a couple questions to make sure I understand this. Obviously, it's clear that I think your colleague here also agrees that the jury could have been instructed simply to make the determination about liability, willfulness, and that the court separately. We all agree that did not happen, and he. Yes.
No, we did have some tension or inconsistency.
Well, the court recognized that when studying the arguments in the judgment NOV and corrected it, saying I erred not to have corrected it at the time, but we still have a jurisprudence that asks us to be wise, and for a court to correct itself at the earliest possible time would be what we would expect and what occurred.
But the premise of your argument here is that is not what the court did, and that the court abused its discretion in sending it back to the jury.
Correct. The court erred in sending it back to jury.
Am I correct about the standard of review? Because I thought your brief was framed in terms of abuse of discretion. And do you agree that the court would have discretionary authority in this instance to resolve that tension one way or the other?
No.
Okay.
I do not agree with that. And I believe that our standard of review, we said, was de novo with this court as a matter of law, but that the court did not have discretion to send that, not with the instruction that the court sent back, which allowed it to redo its entire findings. And also not in the way that the court did it, which was three times, and therefore seems to have a message to the jury, change your verdict. That's what is the error, and that the court does not have a right to do.
And then you conclude that the remedy for this is to go back and amend the first verdict as opposed to just starting all over.
We asked for the remedy being that the court's judgment NOV, which did amend the first verdict, be affirmed. Right. I believe the first verdict has already been amended by that judgment NOV.
Right. But in effect, there have been two verdicts here that have been amended. One, by virtue of the sense that the second verdict by the virtue of the sense that it's null because it's the product of error, and then the first one to correct this calculation.
Yes, correct.
Got it.
I'm out of time. Anything further? Thank you very much.
My answer to your question, Judge Russell, is the court did have discretion to do what it did. At trial, Mr. Troulard did not object to the concept of re-instructing the jury and having them reconsider their verdict. He agreed to that. He then disagreed with the particular structure of the supplemental instruction. So the issue comes down to whether that supplemental instruction was appropriate and whether it was neutral. And for all the reasons I've said here today and in our briefs, it was neutral. It did not direct that any particular verdict be brought back. It gave the jury the option to do any number of things. Mr. Troulard just said here that the jury can change a calculation, that a judge can change a calculation. That is not true. That's what was done in the Boulder Valley case. That was held to be a change of substance inconsistent with the jury's verdict. It was reversible error there. It was reversible error here. Thank you.
Thank you. That case will be deemed submitted in the written. Of course. The court thanks both counsel for their excellent arguments. Thank you very much.